The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Generations Radio, where the focus is on our seniors and their families. We are here each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 6 p.m., bringing you resourceful information with our radio team of professionals in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore different ways to make life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors, right here on AM 690 The Answer. And now, here is our host and the publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
And welcome back to Generations Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I'm here with my longtime friend, buddy here. Contributor to the magazine, has been writing articles since probably day one, I think you were.
Day one, absolutely.
And that was October 2010.
Really?
It's amazing. Scott McCool-Connie, welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and a lot of people know who you are already, but you're our legal advisor here for the magazine, and thanks for writing all the articles. But I've known you for a long time. We've been involved in aging forever, and you know, it's amazing. It's been actually going on 9 years. We made 8 years. We started a magazine with our October issue, which we brought out the August September Senior Fair. But we started working on Generations Magazine in January 2010 when I made 50. Mm. And Kini Popo, the great publisher editor from the previous Generations Magazine, he closed it down in August 2009. And when I made 50 in January 2010, we'll bring it back. And he was at that point where he was, I think he was had enough of doing these issues, and we took it over, and next thing I know, I'm calling Kirk Matthews to be our first cover story. Bless his that guy. He's, you know, he's unfortunately gone, but and Wilson Angel, my art director, my classmate from MidPack, we kind of restarted a magazine, rebranded as a resource magazine, and thanks to experts like yourself, the magazine is growing, and we're probably one of the few print resources growing actually, and statewide through the library system. And thanks to KTA and on the Big Island, really does a great job, and libraries and YMCAs. But thanks to you, people love the magazine and all the great information. So, you know, we're glad to have you back.
I take all the credit. Thank you.
I
deserve none of it. You've done a great job. Congratulations.
Well, really. Thank you. Yeah, well, it's been a lot of hard work. A lot of spending a lot of time in the senior marketplace. I'm at quite a number of meetings every week and every month, and we're putting on great events. Mm-hmm. A couple of weeks ago, we had Carol Kai at the Senior Fair Windward Mall, and then we'll be coming up. We'll have done the Great Aloha Run already, but then we'll have a couple of events coming in the future with Kahala Mall. We'll be doing a Senior Games with the Parks and Recs. And of course, August 17th is our 13th year doing our Aging in Place workshop at the Alamon Hotel. So guys, look out for that. But anyway, thanks for coming down. What's been going on?
Crazy busy. The area that I work in is growing, if anything.
Yeah.
There's more and more seniors every day.
Yep.
And there's more and more need for all the things that seniors need, whether it's estate planning, a place to live, a place for care.
Yeah, all above. You know, I do a lot of research. I get a lot of stuff sent to me every week. And I was reading something just the other day about how there's more people over 60 years old than the under the age of 18 in the world. Not only Hawaii.
In the world.
In the world.
Wow.
Yeah. The overall population. And the reason why is because all these millennials that was born from 82 to 2004, I can't remember the right amount of years, they're not having as many kids. You know, women are becoming more secure themselves, not having kids as early, not getting married as early, not having as many kids. Their professional careers are going, so they're having less kids. And so with every month, 10,000 people turning 60. In Hawaii it's about 6,000 every year or every month. I can't remember what it was, but it's every month going by, more and more people reaching the age of 60.
Mm-hmm.
And those numbers are growing. We're seeing more and more younger people listen to our show, read our magazine, because they have chronic diseases in their 40s. They're dealing with their parents. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for resources. Before, we would say we're over 50 market, but we're looking at people in their 40s now.
Sure.
Dealing with their parents or having chronic disease at an earlier age, don't you see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. I wouldn't say more people are coming in the younger demographic for estate planning because they still don't, most of them don't see the need.
No.
Although the need is there. It really is.
Yeah. So a couple of areas we want to talk about. We want to talk about probate, estate planning, power attorneys and medical directives, things like that. But I don't want to put you on the spot, but you know, the big law that passed January, the medical aid in dying. Mm-hmm. Have you got any opinion? Have you thoughts about that? About the new bill?
It's the law, so and I wouldn't say that I agree with the concept of physician assisted suicide. It just to me runs counter to the physician patient relationship. I understand that there are horrible circumstances where someone is in intractable pain and really wants a way out, needs a way out. I understand that. In countries and really even in some of the states in the U.S. that have had physician-assisted suicide for a while, I mean, they've run into some other collateral problems, like health insurance companies telling people, well, look, no, we're not going to pay for this care. All you got to do is get these pills and problem solved. And I really don't want to see insurance policy and money savings be the impetus behind whether someone has access to the drugs that would help them kill themselves or not, and with this physician's assistance.
Yeah, well, we had Compassionate Choices on here in 2017. They passed it 2018. 17 before they went to legislature in 2018. And I mean, I think everybody has their own choice. Everybody makes their own opinions about and the way they want to go through their life. And I just know some of the pharmacies are not going to be dispensing the drugs, right?
That I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of makes sense. There's nothing to compel the pharmacies to do that. But, you know, what they find in other places where people get the drugs, most of the time they don't use them.
Right.
It's a nice security blanket, I guess, for some people. Mm-hmm. So I don't see it necessarily as a horrible societal evil, but I see the potential for abuse. And abuse has happened in other places.
Yeah. I think the best part about it, we're talking about end-of-life options. Mm-hmm. Hospice is not really prevalent in our community here in Hawaii. I saw a statistic, I don't know, about 7-8 years ago where Hawaii was one of the lowest 3% of the states using hospice.
I'm surprised.
Oh, yeah. People don't want to talk about it. Many clients, they don't want to talk about it. I've had family members don't want to talk about it. And it's unfortunate. We were in that study I saw, Hawaii was number 2 of people dying in the ER, which is not good. Number 1 was New York. And Hawaii was number 2. And I was surprised at that number. That's not good. And unfortunately, we need to do this more. We need to talk about hospice care more, palliative care more, and we just need to get out there more. And so, unfortunately, there's only 4 companies in the state of Hawaii. 3 are nonprofit, one is a for-profit entity. All the hospitals have access to that, but why we're not talking about it more, I don't know. But anyway, so do you see an increase, or you see more people changing their trusts and wills before they pass away, or is that... Do you guys do a review of that? Do they?
We do. The practice in our office is to encourage clients to come back every year for a review. And most of the time, the changes that they make are minor. They come.
Oh,
they come. They see the value. They come. We update.
Good.
But most of the time, it's not wholesale changes. Very rarely does somebody say, oh, I don't want that kid to be in my trust anymore, so I'm going to cut him out. I mean, it happens, but rarely.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm glad you did the annual review, because a lot of clients I see, they don't do the review. Didn't we know if their attorney is still alive? That's one of the first things I ask. Are they still alive?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge problem with estate planning, is people assuming that they do their estate plan and they don't have to think about it anymore. But it's not a fire and forget thing. It's really not. You got to stay on top of it. It's a process.
Right.
And it sets you on a course. And you're going to go off course at some point through no fault of anybody's.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just that things change.
Yeah, we don't have perfect lives.
And you keep going off course. You get further and further off course. Then something bad happens when the estate plan is called upon and it can't do its job because it's so far off course. And that's what we don't want to see happen. And that's why we encourage our clients to come back for the annual reviews.
Do you still are you still doing your monthly workshops on how to explain what a trust is?
And we do. Yeah, a couple of times a month. So, and you can access that on our website, at least, you know, the workshop times. Right. But usually on a Wednesday morning and then on a Saturday morning, we have at least two a month. And we invite people to come. It's free, no obligation. Just come and learn the kind of things you need to know in order to work with your trusted advisors in coming up with an estate plan that's actually going to work. So we're happy to do workshops for folks who aren't even going to hire us. That's not really the point. The point is to get the information out there.
Yeah. Well, I deal with seniors specifically as well, and a lot of people don't know. That's what I like about your workshop. You tell them what are responsibilities of a trustee, successor trustee. And do you guys cover power attorneys as well?
We do.
The duties of a, because I've seen situations where they don't have to be the power attorney, right? You know, their attorney, in fact, they say, I don't want to be that.
Oh yeah, certainly you can decline. Yeah.
You know, and so I think it's really good. So how long are these workshops, by the way?
2 hours.
2 hours. Wow. You cover a lot of stuff.
We do. And most of the time people go away feeling like, wow, I got to come back. I couldn't grasp everything. Because there really is a lot to grasp. And our hope in the workshops is really to have people go away with an appreciation of the breadth of things they need to know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot they need to think about. And the workshop isn't necessarily there to teach them the answer to every single one of their questions, but just to show them the world of questions that they need to be asking and dealing with.
Yeah. So so when you do a full estate plan, do you do all the at one time? I mean, do you give them a big booklet that has the power of attorney, their will, their medical directive all together?
Usually. Yeah. Usually it's a suite of documents along with our advice, along with, you know, the input that we're able to give clients. Mm-hmm. And one thing that maybe distinguishes us a little bit is we're very meticulous about the funding part of the trust. People set up trusts all the time. They maybe put the house in, and that may be it.
Yep.
And if there comes a time down the line, if they refinance or get a home equity line, they have to take the house out of the trust for some lenders. And the lenders are great about helping them get the house out of the trust, not so great about helping them get them back in. So one of the things that comes up often at our annual reviews is, oh yeah, I took my house out. Do I need to put it back in? Well, yeah, you really do if you want your trust to work.
Well, I've been in lending 30 years now. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I started in 1988, and I tell them, unless they require you to take it out, they should not take it out of trust.
That's
right. And the only reason why they're requiring is they don't want to do a legal review from the bank side, right? That's what I was even for our company, our mortgage company, we have to do a legal review and making sure it fits our government requirements. But we don't require. I've never taken them out of trust because we don't want anything happening in the meantime.
Yeah,
you know, we could be a few days to a few couple of weeks if it's out of trust. What happens? Something happens.
Oh yeah, exactly right. But some lenders do require that.
Yeah, I know. I don't like that. I think a lot of the banks per se would do that. But that's just the policy that they have. But so how long is that? How long is say? Let's say I go to your workshop. How long does it take to do the trust? Is it depend on what I want to put in there? What is that process?
It depends on a lot of things. So let's say you come to a workshop, and anybody who comes to one of my workshops, I'll give them a free consultation. But they got to come to the workshop in order to get the free consultation.
Well, I think it's a must because a lot of people don't know that process. That's why I wanted to talk to you about it. For people that are listening out there, they may say, yeah, I need a trust, but they don't know what it entails. They don't know what you're going to require, what kind of paperwork I need to bring in. A lot of questions probably you can bring up that I may not have even thought about. Right?
Well, exactly right. Yeah. So it's usually a couple of weeks before we can do that initial consultation. And that consultation may turn into the client saying, yeah, let's do this already. Let me hire you. Let's move forward. Or it may result in the client saying, well, thank you very much for the input. Let me think about it. But from the time of the workshop to the time of actually getting everything done, it's usually a couple of months. It does take some time. And part of it is just the scheduling. The client's time and scheduling our time. There are a few things that can take a little bit longer, the funding part of the trust, that is the transferring assets into the trust. So we'll prepare the deeds, we'll get them recorded, We'll send off the letters to financial institutions to switch around either beneficiary designations or titling of assets. And that process takes a while, and it's pretty tedious. So you really have to stick to it. And sometimes, you know, it may be the first annual review where we realize, oh, wait, there's still something out there that we need to get into the trust and like that. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to pass away with your trust unfunded or not fully funded. And you don't want to become incapacitated in that circumstance either, because then somebody's going to have to go to court to do asset transfers in all likelihood. And we want to avoid going to court if we can.
Well, can't, so you're talking about somebody that's incapacitated or that has dementia, Alzheimer's?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so couldn't a successor trustee make those?
Well, successor trustee can't do anything about the bank account that never got into the trust.
Bank account that never got in.
The trustee's in charge of whatever's in, yeah. But that's the trick. You got to get it in.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons we do durable powers of attorney, even for clients who have trusts, is to give someone the authority to put assets into the trust in case there's just something hanging out there. Or, you know, sometimes clients acquire things later on, like right before they die, or, you know, even after they become incapacitated, they could inherit. There could be a variety of reasons that there's an asset that just isn't where it should be.
So a durable power attorney can allow to have that attorney, in fact, put assets into the trust?
As long as the creator of the trust, I call this person the trust maker.
Okay.
As long as the trust maker is alive, yes.
As long as alive.
Yeah.
But let's say they are incapacitated, have dementia. That successor trustee or
the agent under the durable power of attorney can still act.
Oh, okay.
And powers of attorney can be a little bit problematic, you know, from the lending standpoint. You don't want it to be too old. You want it to be specific in terms of saying you can do certain things. Mm-hmm. And so the powers of attorney that we typically do for clients that are just sort of emergency measures, they're pretty comprehensive and they're pretty broad. Because we don't know specifically what's going to be needed. So what we tell clients is find somebody you really, really trust. Because giving the power of attorney is also giving the power to do you harm. So make sure it's somebody who's not going to do you harm and give them very broad discretion to be able to help you.
Well, let me ask you this then. You know, I work with so many situations. What does a person do if they don't have any relatives at all or relatives they don't trust?
That's a problem. That is a problem. You either find somebody. There are a few smaller trust companies in town. There's the banks that more or less cater to the folks who have $1 million in investable assets.
Right.
But there are a few smaller fiduciaries in town that, you know, people can investigate.
Yeah, I know a couple of them.
Yeah.
You know, Gary Powell from the
Caregiver Foundation.
Mm-hmm. And is CSI still around?
CSI is.
Okay. And Schindelman.
They're a nonprofit trust company.
Right.
So they have the advantage of you know, not having to make a big profit, so they don't have to charge huge fees.
Well, that's what the two guys I usually refer out to because they've been around for a while. They've been trusted. They've been tested. And so I'm seeing more and more families, they have children, but they don't trust the children.
Yeah.
Or they have chronic diseases themselves, you know.
Or the kids are fighting with each other.
Do you see a lot of that nowadays?
Oh, a lot. It's not the rule, but I do see it very often, yes.
And so what happens? I've seen situations hire their own attorneys.
It's tough, yeah. Yeah. The kids can hire their own attorneys. One solution that a lot of times people overlook is mediation.
Yeah.
Just getting in front of a mediator. Mediation Center of the Pacific has a whole Kupuna specialized mediation area. Mm-hmm. And people are kind of foolish not to take advantage of that because the mediators through the Mediation Center of the Pacific tend to be very, very good. And some of them are just top-notch, you know, on the outside. Mm-hmm. But when they work for the Mediation Center, they're volunteering their time. So there's not the same kind of cost.
Yeah, small, minimal cost, I know that.
It's very small.
Yeah, we've done stories in a magazine about that, and it's something I think families need to get ahead of the game and get ahead of the ball because once you get mad at your brother or sister, and you know if you got the means to hire an attorney on your side, they're going to scrutinize everything, and that attorney is going to
Make money,
but cause more problems. I didn't want to say that, but may cause more problems.
Could, yeah.
You know? But you know, with Hawaii's assets, I mean, we have a lot of families have a lot of assets here. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at some smaller state where the house is only worth 100,000 to 200,000. That's not nothing to fight
not
about.
Here.
But when you got a lot of houses, depending on where they live, is $1 million or more, mm-hmm. or multiple. I just met with a lady yesterday. She got a $1 million home and two condos worth about 800,000 each, mm-hmm. all free and clear, mm-hmm. no kids, and she's worried about down the road. Mm-hmm. And so I referred them out to a realtor and a tax person and a financial advisor because she doesn't have long term care, but she got a lot of assets. Luckily, mm-hmm. you know, I said, good thing about it, you don't have any kids to fight over your property. Bad part about it, you know, she doesn't have any relatives around either. So yeah. Something that her financial advisor is going to work with. But so regards to, give me your opinion about, because I see situations where we find out eventually the property's in an irrevocable trust. Mm. And for whatever reason, not faulting the attorney, a lot of times these people don't understand how their irrevocable works, trust works, or they don't even know why they did it maybe, or why their parents did it, and they can't get out of it.
Yeah, you can have that problem. Now, a lot of times a trust agreement is going to have some back doors. And so if you talk with the person who drew it, maybe there are ways to figure out solutions. And a well-drafted trust is going to have some back doors.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, a lot of times that attorney that drafted the trust is no longer around, mm-hmm. or is retired, or they say, I won't do it because that wasn't the intent of when we first did it.
Well, and if that's true, then that's kind of what they're stuck with. If that's what mom and dad wanted when they set this thing up, the kids are going to have to live with it. And maybe mom and dad had really good reasons for tying things up in the trust. Yeah, because of the kids' youth or bad habits, bad friends, bad whatever.
Well, I see it where they're trying to plan for Medicaid, but you can't do that anymore.
You can't?
I thought you couldn't do that. Use an irrevocable trust for Medicaid planning.
Trusts aren't a favored strategy as far as the state Medicaid folks go. That's true. Even revocable trusts. If you have a revocable trust with your house in it, the state's going to want you to pull the house out of the trust in order to qualify. But there's tons of ways to plan for Medicaid qualification because the rules are pretty clear as to what you can own and the kinds of transfers that you can make without shooting yourself in the foot, mm-hmm. without affecting your mm-hmm. eligibility. So as long as you know you're working with folks who understand the rules, there are ways to plan, and you can save a good portion of an estate. You don't necessarily have to spend everything before qualifying.
But I've seen situations where the property isn't an irrevocable trust, and they want to apply for Medicaid. I understand that you cannot apply for Medicaid if it's in an irrevocable trust.
That person, I don't know. I don't know that there's a regulation or a rule that says that. That might be policy. But I don't think it's certainly not the federal law. Okay. And that's what our rules are patterned after.
Okay. Because I've heard many a time where they're saying they can't qualify, they can't apply for Medicaid when the property's in an irrevocable or irrevocable trust when they apply. Hmm. And I don't know if you've seen that, but I've seen that recently in the last year.
Okay. No, I haven't actually. So
they can still apply for Medicaid even though it's in an irrevocable trust?
Well, you can apply, but the reason you want to be really careful. The general rule is don't apply until you qualify.
Right.
The only times that you would apply knowing you're not going to qualify is if you're trying to get some timeline running. So there may be, you know, good reasons to do that, to be able to, that there are strategies you can actually do to reduce any kind of penalty periods and like that.
Right,
so
right.
Sometimes
the immediate annuity, that. Things like that?
Those kinds of things, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So, but do you get involved in Medicaid and the planning of the trust and things like that?
We do. Medicaid planning isn't a huge focus in our office, but yeah, we do help people plan for those kinds of things.
I know you get involved with probates. You see a growing business in probates. Are you doing much probates at all?
Yeah, we do, but that's one of those kind of things that we don't like to do. We don't want our clients to have to go through.
Oh, yeah.
So most of the time when we're doing probates, we're probating a will that was drawn by another firm.
Right.
Because typically what we would do in the planning process is figure out ways to get around probate.
No, because we've seen more and more people come asking questions about probate process because they never did a trust. Or the kids come to me and their parents never had a trust. But do you take on those kind of cases
sure.
as well?
Yes.
Okay, good. And what's the time frame on that right now?
Well, a very quick probate would be about a year.
A year?
Oh, yeah.
That's quick?
That's quick.
Wow.
That's quick. There's just a lot of moving parts to a probate. Now, you can there are probates that are pretty simple. There are what we call informal probates. And with the informal probate, all you got to do is get appointed, and then you never really have to go back and see a judge again. So as long as the whole family is in sync, everybody's agreeable, everybody's getting along, informal probate can be pretty painless. Unfortunately, though, it doesn't take a lot to cause an informal probate to have to become a formal probate and then, you know, have court hearings and all this, all the horrible things that you hear about probate.
Well, I've just seen more and more situations where, for whatever reason, the family didn't get a trust, and so
and the family shouldn't feel too bad because they're in the majority. We did a survey at the Bar Association, just informal survey. Mm-hmm. So how many people in this room even? And this is all practicing attorneys. How many people in this room have an estate plan? About 40% did. 60% did not.
Really? Why is that?
I don't know. Maybe these folks are never going to die. They're never going to have problems. Well, but they're, I mean, yeah, it, good question. Why not?
Well, I had an attorney say, well, I don't need one until one of us pass away. Is that true?
Well,
because, I mean, because nothing transfers over until both pass away, right?
Maybe yes, maybe no.
Unless you have.
What if one becomes incapacitated? Right. What if both become incapacitated? They're both still alive. Neither of them can make decisions. Neither of them can sell assets, access bank accounts. Somebody's going to have to be appointed by the court in a conservatorship proceeding, which in conservatorship, I tell people, is probate on steroids. It's all the bad stuff you hear about probate. Conservatorship is way worse. It even takes longer because it lasts as long as you do, plus however long it takes to wind it up when you're dead, and then you got to probate whatever's left at that point.
Right.
So, yeah, you don't want to go into the future without a plan. You really don't.
Yeah, I'm surprised about that. But anyway, boy, it's about time. Has it been that time for half the show already?
Oh, good.
Wow, that was quick. Time flew by, Mr. Scott. We're here with Scott Mokuakani, legal advisor in a magazine and estate planning attorney here in Hawaii. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
When you feel like Vegas, there's just one place to stay.
That's a party that's a cow.
Grab a drink at the Holo Holo Bar. There's just one place to play.
That's a party
that's
a cow.
We got a fresh hot look, a new sports book. Those local meals, just like Auntie Cook's. Aloha spoken here.
Check out the Cow's new renovated look and see why the Cow is Hawaii's favorite place in Vegas to stay and play.
Have you been looking for a safe anti-inflammatory for your health and longevity? Introducing Xanthosin, a doctor-recommended astaxanthin supplement that supports your joints, heart, liver, and longevity. Xanthosin is safe, pure, and specially formulated for superior absorption. Xanthosin complies with all FDA regulations for manufacturing and labeling. Xanthosin, the safe anti-inflammatory for health and longevity. Available at a GNC store near you.
If you're new to Medicare, we can help you work your way through all the questions, the details, and the headaches. Generations TV has gathered experts in the field to help you find the answers. This is Navigating Medicare.
Hi, I'm back again. This is Ed speaking on Medicare Hints.
A lot of people may not realize that they may qualify for extra financial assistance to help pay for their premiums and prescription drug costs, depending on their income and their total assets. These savings can be especially helpful for seniors who are on a fixed income.
Find out if you qualify. Call us.
Helping you work your way through the confusion. Navigating Medicare. Brought to you today by Financial Benefits Insurance, serving the entire state of Hawaii from the corner of Pi'ikoi and Kapi'olani in Honolulu.
Did you know residential care homes offer a family-oriented atmosphere? At Caregivers Heart Hawaii, our kupuna become part of the family. The smaller environment allows for more personal attention. For example, there's no waiting to go to the bathroom compared to other long-term care options. The patient-to-caregiver ratio is smaller and help is faster. Over time, residential care homes are less expensive compared to other long-term care options. Our caregivers are experienced and enjoy what they do, and all homes are ADA approved. Don't feel stressed and overwhelmed or try to do this alone. Aloha, I am Ku'unani Demonte with Caregivers Heart Hawaii. Let us help you with all your care home placement needs. Caregivers Heart Hawaii has knowledge and experience. For a free consultation and to learn more about us, go to caregivershearthawaii.com, where treating kupuna like family is our business.
Got Vegas on your mind? Get Vacations Hawaii on the line. Vacations Hawaii offers weekly 4 and 5 night Honolulu to Vegas packages, which include 3 meals daily from $6.99. Stay at Hawaii's favorite casinos, California, Fremont, Main Street Station, and Orleans Hotel. Vacations Hawaii will get you there in comfort on deluxe wide-body 767 planes with complimentary in-flight hot meal service. Vacations Hawaii's frequent flyer program gives you future travel discounts and credits. So if you're ready to win big, call Vacations Hawaii at 591-4777 or visit voidvacationshawaii.com.
Hi, I'm Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group. Let us be your Medicare resource throughout the year. We have agents throughout the islands to be of assistance to you. So if you have Medicare questions, we have the answers. Call us at 808-591-4877. Again, 808-591-4877. Thank you. We look forward to hearing from you.
Today, more than ever, we local people are living longer than any other state in the union, with more seniors, baby boomers, and caregivers. Generations Radio promotes the importance to be proactive as we all age. The radio team will focus on issues facing our seniors and their families, finding resources to navigate healthy aging along with financial, legal, and caregiving information. So join Percy E. Howard from 5 until 6 each Saturday, right here on AM 690, The Answer. Focusing on the issues facing our seniors and their families today. Here's our Generations Radio host, Percy Ihara.
So welcome back to Generations Radio. We're here with Scott Mukuakani, and our February-March issue will be out, and I don't know if you've seen the cover, but it's on a, I wouldn't say a controversial topic because I ran it by a number of people. It's on medical marijuana and the uses of that. And I didn't realize 44 states have it approved for medical marijuana. And there's a growing amount of in debate and talk about the recreational coming to Hawaii, but we'll see about that. But the medical uses are tremendous. And more people I talk to, they're trying it, they're doing it. We're gonna have some expert doctors that are talking about it, have some patients talking about it, how to get your card, things like that. And it's just as an option. Mm-hmm. But we're finding more and more people talking to hospice people that is good for pain. And I think a lot of it with the opioid epidemic, it might be a better option for people.
Interesting. You know?
Yeah. I kind of ran this by some people in October, November last year. I said, what do you think about it? Because I wasn't quite sure whether we wanted to go there yet. But the more and more people I talked to some legislators about it, and it's something that is an option. And it's a growing option for people. And I think the state of Hawaii, at some point down the road, we'll have to approve recreational marijuana down the road.
That seems to be the trend. It does.
So we'll
and,
see.
And, you know, the states that do have recreational marijuana, they haven't really slid off into the ocean. I mean, you don't see the really horrible things. My personal guess is that most of the time when marijuana is legalized in a state, the folks who are already smoking it will continue to smoke it, but legally. And people who haven't been smoking it aren't going to start. As a rule, I think.
Yeah. Well, the medical uses of it is tremendous with arthritis, pain. Like I said, end of life that we were seeing it for other, like Parkinson's. There was a study on Parkinson's about it that really helped them. It's amazing. And it's going to be, I think it's a big growing trend as people look for different options. But anyway, we're here with Scott Mukuakani, our attorney in the magazine. So we talked about, during the break, we're talking about this situation. I've seen more and more situations where the mom and dad has passed away. It's the property's in their trust, but the kids are living in the home, and they continue to have the trust going. And you had mentioned there are good things and bad things about whether dissolving that parent's trust or not.
Yeah, and I suspect a lot of times people don't dissolve the trust just because they don't know they're supposed to do that, or they just don't get around to it. That's not uncommon. But there can be great reasons to leave assets in trust. If you're concerned about one of your children's marriages, you can leave them their share of the inheritance, but in a way that they can access later on, but their future ex-spouse can't. Or if you're concerned about creditors' claims, or if you're concerned about, I call them the baboos beneficiaries, the ones who just don't have the mental firepower maybe to hold on to assets. And it may be because they're young, maybe because they have bad habits or bad friends, but these are folks who need a little help managing their inheritance. And leaving the assets in trust can provide some really good ways to leave a resource, rather, for the kids without giving them the ability to blow it.
Now, explain to our listeners, they may have questions about taxes. The trust does not avoid taxes, is that correct, when they pass on?
Yes and no. Trusts are generally tax neutral. But one of the kinds of things you can do by leaving assets in trust is you can make it so that the assets that you leave to your kids are not going to be taxed as part of your children's estates for estate tax purposes. They can enjoy the assets for their lifetimes, pass them on to their kids, and not have any estate tax at either of those transfers from the parents to the children or the children to the grandchildren.
Okay. You sent me a long list of questions. These are great questions you sent me.
Thank you.
I think you have, do you get that out when you guys go to workshops?
We do.
Wow, that's a lot. I mean, guys, ask for the Q&A, frequently asked FAQ from Scott McCool County's office, because a lot of great questions in here, and I'm just kind of scrolling through these. What are the taxes might be part of an estate?
Well, the income tax is what people are generally really concerned about. As a rule, income tax is a minor estate planning consideration. Capital gains tax, on the other hand, might be a more important consideration. Capital gains tax being the tax on the difference between what maybe you inherited, the value of property when you inherited it, and the value when you sold it. The difference there, if there's a positive difference, it's a capital gain. If it's negative, it's a capital loss. But it makes a big difference whether you give somebody an asset during your lifetime or upon death as to that capital gains consequence. As a rule, it's better to inherit property from someone than to have them give it to you by gift, strictly from a capital gains tax standpoint, because if you receive it by gift, you receive that person's basis. So if dad bought this property way back when for $100,000, but now it's worth $1 million, he gives it to you during his lifetime, you get his $100,000 basis. If he gives it to you upon his passing, you get his day-to-death fair market value as your basis. So the capital gains would be calculated on the difference between the sale price and $1 million instead of between the sale price and $100,000. You'd much rather have the $1 million basis.
That's why they don't transfer to after they pass away, right?
That would be a reason, yes.
A lot of the time we see that. You have a question here. Once my spouse and I set up the trust, how should we carry title?
Yeah, that's can be kind of a point of contention in some situations. But most of the time, what clients understand is they got to get their assets into the trust. Some of them are husband's assets. Some of them are wife's assets, for example, you know, belong to one spouse or the other. Others are joint assets. So what do they do with those? Well, one of the ways that we deal with that issue is husband and wife or spouses, doesn't have to be male and female, spouses can be trustees of each other's trusts.
Okay, reciprocal.
So if they are a co-trustees of one spouse's trust and co-trustees of the other spouse's trust, before they do anything, they own everything together. After they do the estate planning, they still own everything together. And by being co-trustees, you can build it so either spouse can act, even if the other one doesn't know what's going on, or both spouses have to know exactly what's going on for either spouse to act.
Good one. That's a good one. Okay. Is there a downside to tenancy by the entirety? So can you explain, first of all, tenants by entirety, is that for married couples, right?
Tenancy by the entirety under Hawaii law is for married couples, it's for reciprocal beneficiaries, it's for civil union partners. And essentially the way it works is it was sort of fleshed out in a case called Sawada versus Endo. This is from back in the 70s, where a car accident, Mr. Endo goes home and he says, oh, I think I did a bad thing. I don't think I have enough insurance to cover this claim. And so what they do very quickly is they transfer title from mom and dad, who owned it as tenants by the entirety, to the kids. And then when the folks who got creamed in the accident sued and got a judgment and tried to enforce the judgment, they found out about that transfer to the kids and they tried to have it set aside. And the Hawaii Supreme Court said, well, you know, because it's tenancy by the entirety property, you couldn't have touched it anyway. So no harm, no foul. We're not going to do anything bad. So that's the good part of tenancy by the entirety if you're the person who has the liability. The creditors of one spouse can't touch it. The downside to tenancy by the entirety is, let's say in that circumstance, wife had died first. Husband was the one in the car accident. They own the house as tenants by the entirety. He goes home, he says, oh, I had this bad thing, and the family says, oh, no, don't worry, it's tenants by the entirety. But then mom dies at the wrong time. Now dad owns 100%. Now those folks can go after the property.
And after the fact, could they?
Sure. Because once they have a judgment, the judgment all by itself is good for 10 years. It can be renewed. So, and in the Sawada versus Endo case, interestingly, mom did die before dad. So if they had left things as they were, they might have lost the house. Transferring it to the kids actually was good in that circumstance. Now, it used to be that under Hawaii law, if you took tenancy by the entirety property and put it into your trusts, you would lose the tenancy by the entirety protection in all likelihood. Now, by statute, as long as you got the right language in your trust and in your deed, you can maintain the tenancy by the entirety protection even after you put assets into the trust.
Okay, got it. Since we're on legal matters, I mean, many years ago, there was a famous case where, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, where mom was had dementia, Alzheimer's. And I guess the hospital, she was near the end of her life. Mm-hmm. And I guess her brother had a power of attorney, but a medical director said something different.
Oh, the sister didn't have dementia.
Sister.
She was, but I mean, she couldn't communicate well.
Okay.
She'd had a series of strokes, and a stroke apparently had landed her in the hospital. And the conflict there was the hospital deciding that she was in an irreversible coma. She wasn't going to wake up, so we need to pull the plug. And she did have an advance directive that said, I don't want any extraordinary measures to keep me alive. The thing is, at the same time she signed that advance directive, she signed a durable power of attorney giving her brother authority.
Her brother.
So there were these two conflicting documents. And the hospital in that case sided with the advance medical directive that says, I don't want, you know, anything going forward. Hmm. But both of the documents said this document controls in all events. So picking and choosing between the two documents wasn't, the wisest course. But in any event, when that lady was finally gotten out of the hospital, by golly, she came out of the coma. She was able to communicate again. And I was able to ask her, if you were in this situation again, would you want the family to go ahead and pull the plug? She said, no, I want to live. And this was a situation where it was totally private pay. It's not like, you know, the taxpayers were paying for her care or anything like that. But it was just a really odd case where the hospital took the initiative to force the brother to pull the plug on his sister.
And I didn't know that she came out of the coma later on.
She did.
Wow.
She did.
Wow. And now I think I mentioned before that both documents were drafted by the same attorney at the same time.
And signed at the same time. Yeah. And I talked with the attorneys and they said, yeah, shucks, I don't know. I can't explain it.
So if the brother just went by what the sister said, she wouldn't have been around.
She wouldn't be around.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. That's a great story. It's a true story, by the way. but that's a good example of how sometimes we don't think of the worst case scenario. And we don't, you know, you just don't know what can happen in life.
And it's tough all the way around. I mean, the doctors are doing their best. They're making the best call they can in the circumstances. Yeah. But they're being, you know, having a medical degree doesn't make you a prophet. So you don't necessarily know what's going to go down the line, with that patient. And doctors do their best. So that this is not to, you know, say that we don't have wonderful doctors and that they're not doing their best.
Yeah, we don't live in a perfect world. Another question. What other taxes might take a bite out of an estate?
Well, first of all, you've got the estate tax, which is simply the tax on the privilege of dying while owning stuff.
But what's a tax threshold? Like $5 million per person? What's that threshold?
Well, it's actually, for state purposes, it's 5.49. For federal, it's 11.4 per person.
Per person.
So most people don't have to worry about the estate tax. The ones who do, the estate tax comes in at 40% on the federal side, and then the state jumps on for about another 10%. The state and federal systems are a little different. The state has a graduated tax rate. The feds are just a flat tax rate, just a flat 40%. So the estate tax is one tax. Another tax is what we call the generation skipping transfer tax. The generation skipping transfer tax is there to basically curb estate planning a little bit. If you have so much in the way of assets that you die, you pass them on to your kids, there's going to be an estate tax at that transmission. Then your kids die, they pass them on to their kids, there's going to be another tax. But if you have a huge estate, if your last name happens to be, Rockefeller or Kennedy or something like that, you can see how the estate is going to be taxed at every generation, even though it doesn't really have the opportunity to get consumed at every generation. So where some of the wealthy families used to skip over their kids and give assets to the grandkids, our Congress said, no, that's no fair. We got to tax it every generation. So we want to tax it as if it had been taxed when dad died and then when son died before son passed it on to grandson, for example.
Okay, that went right over my head, but that's okay. I don't have that kind of money.
Well, the exclusions are the same as for the estate.
I don't have grandkids either, so my son is still young. But is there a kind of trust that protects my assets from my own creditors?
There is. And this is another relatively recent development in Hawaii law. The classical trust rule is you can't set up a trust that's going to protect you from your own creditors. Somebody else can set up a trust for you to do that, but you can't set it up for yourself. Many states, Hawaii included, have by statute made it so that you can create one of those trusts. And as long as you follow all the rules, it's a really good asset protection strategy. So the kind of person who might want to do it is someone who is either, you know, going to be starting a risky practice like a medical practice or an engineering practice or something like that where they're concerned that, you know, they might get sued. Well, they can take their nest egg and put it into this irrevocable trust before there's any claims against them. And that nest egg is probably going to be safe for the rest of their lives and they can pass it on to their kids. So it's not going to be taken away by a lawsuit or anything like that.
So when you meet with families, do you typically get involved with the children as well? Do the children come into the conversation or be part of the conversation or parents say, no, I'm just going to give them what I want to give them?
It depends. Now, the actual client is the parent, usually.
Right.
So when the parent is the client, you don't really want the kids in the room while you're talking with the parents about the estate plan, just depending on the relationship. Now, if it's a situation where the parents say, no, I want all of my kids here because I want them to understand what's going on and everybody's being treated equally anyway, then that's fine. The parents, it's the parents' call as to who else is in the room when we have the conversation.
Hmm. And one of your questions here I was looking at is, will a revocable trust avoid taxes? No, right?
It like I said earlier, it's pretty much tax neutral. It doesn't help, doesn't hurt.
Okay. How do you protect beneficiaries? You know, you took care of dad, you get the house. Now we're both beneficiaries of the house. Can I force the sale of the house?
It really depends on how the parents leave the property behind. If you and I are brothers, mom and dad leave the house to you and me, now we're on title. Can one of us force the sale? Yeah.
But if I don't want to sell it, I don't have to sign any documents, do I?
You don't have to sign any documents, but I can take you to court and get a court order forcing the sale.
Hmm. I have to hire my own attorney. It'll cost me money, though.
That's right.
Oh.
Too bad. The attorneys are going to make money on that one.
Well, it's fine. I mean, I understand that's price of doing business, but I'm just seeing more and more families where one took care of mom and dad. And when I see these situations, I say, listen, mom, when you pass away, your son is living here. Is he going to get the whole property? They'll typically will say no. Okay, well, then what's going to happen? Well, they're both going to have to duke it out.
and force a sale. Yeah, that can happen. And that's one great reason to have the family conversation while mom and or dad are still there to be able to say, this is what I want and get everybody's buy-in. And usually families will want to reward the child who, you know, was there providing care, but not always. It's amazing. Sometimes, you know, the other kids say, well, yeah, that's great. You were there. Thank you so much. I still want an equal share of the estate.
Oh, I had a very good friend of mine. We tell the story all the time, you know, a boy and two girls, and the boy came back to take care of mom and dad, And after 5 years, you say, hey, listen, one of you girls got to come back, help me out. Well, one did. And she helped out and they renovated the house, made the mom and dad lived a long time, both bed bound by now. And when they finally both passed away, the one sister who never came back said, I need my one third. And my friend goes, you know, what do I do? I said, well, she's right. Mm-hmm. The document says one third, she gets one third.
That's right.
But I took care of her all these years. I said, you're an angel. But
and, you know, could bring a claim for, you know, claiming that mom and dad agreed that they were going to compensate me by giving me a bigger share of the estate. And if they can prove that, then maybe, you know, they could get a court to back them up. But it's tough.
You got to go to court again.
Got to go to court again. And most of the time, you're not even going to have the evidence to be able to prove that kind
right.
of thing.
Well, my friend, my particular friend, I said, listen, you know, tell your sister that you care for mom and dad for 10 years and you struggled with this and you did all the caregiving for all this time. And maybe just instead of giving her 33%, give her 20%. So I said, good idea, Percy. He went back to his sister. He called me up next week. He goes all pissed off again. I said, what happened? He goes, I told her 20% because I cared for her mom and dad for all these years. You didn't help out at all. She never came back to Hawaii. And, I, you know, I guess I don't blame her. And so he was all mad. So what happened? He goes, well, she said, you lived there rent-free for 10 years. and I get it. So I say, well, he goes, what do I do now? I say, well, take her to court or just give her 33% and you may not ever talk to her again.
Yeah.
And so he gave it a 33%, and I don't think he's going to talk to her again. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I know the sister, and I know she was probably more kolohe than anybody else in the family. And dad probably got pissed off at her more and didn't probably treat her very well. And a lot of that, like you tell me, I mean, from my experience, a lot of times it goes back when they were raised.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yes. Scott, we were the favorite son. You know, Percy got divorced. Even though you're the favorite son, I'm going to give Percy. He doesn't have a house. You have a house. Is it my fault he doesn't have a house? Is it my fault he got divorced? You know, I see that so much, and there's no right or right way to decide on that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
it's tough.
So, do you do any mediation yourself or counseling like that? Because you must see a lot.
We always counsel if it looks like it's going into a conflict situation. We always counsel mediation, whether we participated in it or not. But mediation is just a way, way better way of resolving things because it's a matter of people coming to agreement and coming up with something they can live with rather than some outside person coming down with the law, you know, laying down the law, a judge saying, this is the way it's going to be. It's much more palatable. It's much easier to live with to make the agreement yourself.
Yeah. So here is Scott McCool County. Thank you so much, Scott. Any last other pieces of advice you can tell besides coming to your workshop? Because your workshops are great.
Well, people just need to be aware that they got to do something. And it may not seem like a burning need, but the person who dies crossing the street never saw the need coming. And we never know when we're going to need our estate plan. We're never going to know when we're going to have something in place that's going to make things a lot easier for our families and maybe a lot easier for us too.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's one of those things. I mean, you buy car insurance, you buy homeowner's insurance. An estate plan is kind of like that. It's sort of an insurance policy that will give some assurance that what you want to have happen later on is actually what's going to happen.
Yeah. And what's the best way to get a hold of you and to sign up for the workshops?
Well, people can access our website, www.estateplanning.com. But estate planning is spelled weird. It's EST, the numeral 8, PLANNING, estateplanning.com. Yeah. That's really the best way.
And you still got your videos on there?
There are some videos on the website. Yeah, there's a lot of really good.
Yeah, you have a lot
on the website.
Yeah. And you have the times on the website as well.
Yes, and so people can actually sign up through the website.
Oh, they can
come to the workshop.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important when people start looking at that, because to do this planning, it's a wealth of time, you know. But anyway, Scott, thanks very much. What's your phone number now? I forgot my phone number.
It's 587-8227.
8227. Okay, great. Appreciate it, Scott. Listen, hey, welcome to 2019, and off we go, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
Aloha,
you.
Everybody, and live well. Have a great weekend. Aloha.